Well, we're excited about a potential sequel. At least the beginning details were announced this weekend, and we're going to find out more about that and much, much more as we bring in our Hollywood guru, Michael Warschauer. Michael, thank you so much for the time, my friend. How are you?
Doing well. Glad to talk to you guys again.
Well, let's begin with Eddie Murphy confirming that there will be a sequel to Coming to America. Now, this was widely rumored for at least a few months leading up to this, but over the weekend he confirmed that it's going down. Is this something we should be excited about, and how many other original cast members are expected to be a part of this?
Well, I think it's a big question mark as to how excited we should be. On one hand, it is very exciting to get a sequel to one of the greatest comedies of the last, several decades. But there is a lot of reason to be hesitant, of course, knowing that it's been so long since the original and kind of jumping into a reboot. But there's a lot to be excited for here, and so I'm tending to kind of look at it a little bit optimistically. The entire cast is expected to return. Wow. For the sequel, which should be pretty exciting. It's a story that all we know so far is that Akeem returns to the United States after learning about his long-lost son and therefore his heir. So we know that much. That's about it. The original cast, that's all we know. But we do know that it's coming from writer and executive producer Kenya Barris, who is best known for doing Black-ish on ABC, which has had a really inventive and fantastic run of seasons that he just left this past season, I believe. And the director is the same guy, Craig Brewer, who made Hustle and Flow and just directed Eddie Murphy in a new Netflix movie that's coming out later this year called Dolomite Is My Name. So there's a lot of really big, great pedigree behind this movie. Whether or not we've had too much burnout sequels and reboots over the last couple of years might come into play here, but there's a lot of reasons to be excited, and I, for one, am.
Yeah, I'm excited also. I thought the original was fantastic. You never know what to expect, 30 years after the movie came out? But
right.
I think there's a lot of reason for optimism here. I'm anxious to see where they go with this story. So I'm really, really anticipating this release whenever it comes out. All right, I never really got in to True Detective. I heard the first season was absolutely sensational, but then critics annihilated it because the second season apparently wasn't very good. As a matter of fact, I don't think I spoke to a single soul that said they liked the second season. Episode 1 of season 3 is out. What are some of the early reviews?
The reviews are coming in positive, which is a good sign for HBO and creator Nick Palazzo, who really did have to weather quite a storm with that second season, which, like you said, I don't think I've met a single person that enjoyed season 2 of True Detective. So this new season kind of gets back to basics. It's very similar to the first as far as structure, as far as tone, and just the overall feel. I watched the first two episodes last night, and I was pretty happy with them. I think you get a great performance from Mahershala Ali, who's been just on an incredible hot streak the last couple of years. But you also have a great supporting cast. And like I said, it just sort of has the feel and the tone of that really fantastic first season with Matthew McConaughey and Woody Harrelson. So whether or not they'll be able to keep it up remains to be seen. There's still a lot of episodes left in this season for things to go wrong. But the buzz generally has been much more positive. And what's interesting to me is it'll be interesting to see how now that we've had several years of these sort of dark crime shows kind of all over the place, what the reaction will be to True Detective in 2019 now that we've had so many copycats. So I'm certainly interested in seeing where the rest of the season goes, and I think it's definitely worth checking out if you loved season 1 but were turned off by season 2.
What exactly was it about season 2 that people hated? I mean, it's a star-studded cast, and I mean, I looked at that and I thought, wow, how could this have gone so horribly wrong after it did so well in the first season?
Just about everything went wrong with it. Confusing plots, threads that really didn't go anywhere, very poor character development. It was a really bad use of a really fantastic cast of actors and all of the great buzz that it had behind it. So I think that HBO really took their time. They allowed, I think, 3 years between season two and three for Nick Palazzo to kind of retool everything and come up with a better template to work with. And I think that they just sort of gave themselves more time and lower expectations. And that might have been the big key to turning it around here on this new season.
You talk about character development. How much of that, though, was what Matthew McConaughey and Woody Harrelson were able to bring to the screen? Because, of course, in True Detective 2, it's Colin Farrell, Vince Vaughn added to the mix. It's somebody new in every single season. I guess that's kind of what turned me off of season 2. It didn't have that, I won't say star power, but, I mean, Matthew McConaughey sort of turned his career around with that show.
Absolutely, and I think that was a big part of what made season one so great, is that you had this character that McConaughey was playing that was so easily enjoyable, that even in this very dark show, you tuned in to see him because he was so charismatic mm-hmm. and brought so much life to the character. And season two was so flat, and the characters were so one-dimensional that it was hard even for likable actors like Vince Vaughn and Colin Farrell and Rachel McAdams to bring any life to them. And already we've seen in this first season, if anybody watched the premiere last night, Mahershala Ali's character has so much depth to him already that's beyond just the sort of grizzled cop, that it's definitely more in line with the depth of Matthew McConaughey's character from season one. So I think that's going to be the biggest difference here moving forward for them.
Michael Warshaw, our Hollywood insider, joins us here on Bullseye on the Afternoon. We'll transition into something perhaps at least a little bit lighter, and that's this thing that's been promoted, it feels like, since 1946, The Masked Singer. Feels like you see it pop up every 15 seconds when you're watching any kind of a television program. Early thoughts on this? You think this has got some staying power, or do you think the idea is entirely too ridiculous?
Well, it is a ridiculous idea, but it has been working so far with some pretty great ratings. For those of you who haven't been inundated with the commercials, it's basically it's a singing competition, but all of the contestants are singers or actors or athletes or entertainers that are dressed in these giant costumes, so you don't know who they are. And this is a huge hit show in Korea. You can go and you can look in South Korea. You can look at clips on YouTube. There's even one where Ryan Reynolds is one of the Masked Singers singing a song from Annie. So it has this big pedigree and was very successful coming from South Korea, and it's been doing really well to start off. It's a really wild show. I've only watched a little bit of it, but it's kind of like a fever dream of a reality show. And it's very entertaining. Whether or not it will have staying power beyond sort of this one gimmick that might last for this season or a next, I don't know. They'll have to figure out something to kind of keep it interesting other than just like these wacky costumes. Or it could go the way of like Lip Sync Battle, which was huge for a moment, and then kind of people got bored with it and it sort of faded from consciousness. So I don't know what its staying power is, but it's certainly a nice, entertaining option if you like singing competitions and are looking for something a little bit different.
Boy, speaking of fading from consciousness, you take a look at that cast from Saved by the Bell, and just to kind of see how a lot of them have disappeared over the years. Mark Paul Gosselaar made some comments earlier this week, and that's Zach Morris, of course, about how he thought they were really kind of given bad advice and how they're not making a whole lot of money off this well after the fact. And I think this came out of the idea that the Friends cast is still making a healthy chunk of change for the episodes that air in syndication still to this day. Yet when it comes to Saved by the Bell, the cast members don't necessarily get those same benefits. Wow. And it's not like they've all gone on to do wonderful things. They stayed busy. I thought it was really interesting, though, that Mark Paul Gosselaar said he hasn't talked to Dustin Diamond, a.k.a. Screech, since 1994. That blow you away?
A little bit. I think it's a really long time. But given where Dustin Diamond has been since Saved by the Bell, I'm not too surprised. He has had a lot of legal trouble. There's been he was even in jail, I think, at one point for stabbing someone in a bar fight. He had a sex tape controversy, and then a few years ago released a book that was a tell-all about his time at Saved by the Bell, where he told all of these stories of drug use and hookups and all of this gossip from backstage that really upset a lot of his co-stars, to the point where he had to come out and say most of it was untrue and it was written by a ghostwriter. So he hasn't really done a lot to endear himself to his former castmates. So I'm not too surprised to hear that the two of them haven't been in touch for that long, which certainly dampens the possibility of a Saved by the Bell reunion, to say the least.
Well, maybe he just said that his book should have been labeled fiction, right? Instead of nonfiction. It's not exactly a true story. I thought it was interesting how whenever it was they did that deal on the Fallon show, Richard Belding, a.k.a. Dennis Haskins, you know, he mentioned, I don't know, about 10 years ago, he felt a little left out when they tried to put that reunion together. And then it just, ever since then, it seemed, you know, the reunion on the Fallon show, like, not everybody's been included. It really feels like this cast just fell apart, and then nobody was ever able to put the pieces back together again.
It certainly seems like it, yeah.
Who was left out of the Jimmy Fallon one? Screech?
Screech was, Belding was. They were both left out of it. And I think...
Well, Belding's been in all of them, though. I mean, at some point, don't you kind of have to cut ties with him? He was in the college years and everything else.
He wasn't at the reunion, I don't think.
He was in the new one. I don't know. I don't remember the reunion episode.
Well, they made a documentary, I think, like 5 years ago. I'm fairly certain that he was a part of that, but... Regardless, we'll move our attention now to the box office. I mean, I saw that, you know, boy, Aquaman, all that staying power, despite the fact that it was up against a lot of really big titles. This week, finally, The Upside took care of business, unseating Aquaman for the top spot at the box office. Now, this is a movie, I think, that's gotten some decent reviews. I've not seen it just yet. Were you surprised to see it finally take down Aquaman?
A little bit. I think it was a little surprising to see this particular movie be the one to top it, but not so surprising that after 4 weeks of topping the box office that Aquaman would kind of drop off a little bit. And really, it's not necessarily such a bad thing that it dropped off. They still made $17 million in second place this weekend, and it became the first film in the DC Extended Universe to cross the billion-dollar mark worldwide. After its strong domestic performance and over in China and globally. So Aquaman did pretty great over a four-week span. It did pretty great in a five-week span. So I was a little surprised just that it was The Upside that brought it down. I didn't think there were a lot of other strong movies this weekend, but this one sort of had mixed reviews, and it was also kind of following in the footsteps of Kevin Hart's recent controversy around hosting the Oscars and his old homophobic tweets that he and jokes that he had put out there. So I was a little surprised that it did so well, but it pulled in about $25 million to lead the box office this weekend and perform really nicely. And I don't think it's going to last at the top of the box office. There's some good stuff coming up, especially Glass next week. But certainly a surprise that this was the movie to finally bring down Aquaman.
Well, you mentioned Glass. Expectations for that, I imagine, are pretty high, especially with the way Unbreakable and Split both did in the box office, the predecessors to that movie.
Yeah, I think that from a box office point of view, it's going to do very well. Unbreakable was the movie that didn't perform well at all at the box office when it came out, but has had just a fantastic reputation over the last 19 years since it came out in 2000. So it has really grown in stature since then. And then Split in 2016 was a huge surprise for its studio and for M. Night Shyamalan. It grossed way more than its small $9 million budget and was really a turnaround moment for him. And there's been so much anticipation about Glass, bringing back Bruce Willis and Samuel L. Jackson alongside James McAvoy. I think that's going to be a big hit at the box office. It's a quiet weekend, a lot of hype. I see this movie doing pretty well.
Dare I say, Glass could shatter the box office this weekend. That was way too easy. Way too easy. All right, Michael, my awful puns aside, my friend, what are this week's picks to click?
A couple shows coming this weekend. First of all, you can catch the final season of Grace and Frankie on Netflix. This has been a pretty consistently funny show for the last couple seasons, so it'll be fun to see it go off into the sunset. Also returning on HBO on Sunday night is Crashing, Season 3. The show follows comedian Pete Holmes. It's based on his true story about him becoming a comedian after his wife left him, and has been one of the more pleasant surprises of the last couple years, and certainly worth checking out if you haven't seen it or if you've been following along. And last but not least, a new show on Showtime this weekend called Black Monday. It premieres on Sunday night. It's about the financial collapse in the 80s, starring Don Cheadle, Regina Hall, Andrew Rannells, produced by Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg, and run by the creator of Happy Endings, David Case. This is I'm excited for the show. The trailers have looked fantastic. I'm hoping that it lives up to the hype for sure.
Very good stuff. Well, Michael, as always, we appreciate the time, and we look forward to catching up with you again soon.
Thanks a lot, guys. Sounds good.